Hello, this is Michael Steed, and in this short podcast, I'd like to have a look at a couple of tax issues that are common in the hairdressing world. The first is employment status of stylists, and the second is the VAT on supplies that are either made in or by the salon. Now, I've prepared a short fact sheet to go with the podcast, so there are some pointers there. So let's get going and deal with the first one, which is the employment status of the stylists. Now, hairdressing world is full, as you'd imagine, of people who are notionally self-employed. And as ever, we're called upon to act for salon owners or self-employed stylists. And sometimes we need to make judgments about whether they're actually self-employed at all. Now, there's quite a useful link, which I'm going to put on my fact sheet, to the National Federation of Hairdressers, who've obviously been there and done this one about 1,000 times over. And that's quite a useful source of information if you, as a member of the AAT, are called upon to act for a hairdresser. That's got to be a very early stopping off point for the getting of information. And of course, this podcast, just to sort of make you aware of that. So let's have a look at status. Obviously, if you come in off the street as a customer of a hairdressing salon, you will see lots of people milling around, very cheerful, friendly place to be. And I think it's fair to say that HMRC's assumption here is that the customers will perceive there being a salon owner, the salon, and the people working within it as being broadly employees of that salon owner. Now, the reality may be different, and us as members may be trying to establish that it is not within that general assumption of employer and employee. And what we're trying to do is to establish an independent person, the contractor. And in order to do that, we've got to make sure that we've closed off all the possible challenges that HMRC may care to make against us. And what the guidelines effectively do is to try and establish that where you genuinely have a self-employed contractor working in a salon, then the facts support that assertion. And what we're looking for is each party, that's the salon owner and the independent stylist, to sort of have command, authority, control over all the aspects of their respective business. And for everybody to be in a position by which that's readily perceived by the customers. And of course, that last bit, being readily perceived by the customers, actually turns out to be quite difficult in practice. Now, if we're going to have an independent contractor that we are claiming is going to be self-employed, then we've got to jump over a minimum number of hurdles. The contractor's got to have their own proper books and accounting records, and of course, we're very good at that sort of thing. They've got to be responsible for not just their tax affairs, but they've got to be responsible for their own health and safety issues and procedures. They need to be separately insured, public liability insurance, and, you know, within the normal badges of employment versus self-employment, they've got to be capable of suffering losses as well as having profits. And another mark of an independent contractor, somebody who is genuinely self-employed, is that they can set their own price structure and they can open their part of the salon at the hours that suit them and so on and so forth. And as we all know, that's actually very, very difficult to do. Further tests of self-employment that readily spring to mind, the ability and the freedom to actually have somebody come in and stand in their stead if they're, say, away on holiday. And in a perfect world too, if you've genuinely got a self-employed stylist within a salon, then they would have a little sign, a little placard next to their chair, which actually makes that point clear. And as we all know, the world's rather grey. These things do tend to get a bit blurred. But I'm always, always conscious of the fact that if HMRC do challenge us, we need to show that we've thought about the issues and that we've got some decent defences. As far as the customers are concerned, if you've got a genuinely self-employed stylist within a salon, then the client should have direct contact. And we again know that that's quite difficult, especially when you have a central booking system. In a perfect world, you'd have a separate register, appointments, and when a customer came in through the door, they'd have the freedom to actually choose, and it would be made clear to them, again, in this perfect world, that person over there is self-employed and that they don't have to choose them if they don't want to. Very difficult in practice. Money, how do you deal with money if you've got a genuinely self-employed stylist working within a salon? Most customers coming in through the door would expect to have one till and pay centrally, and they'd find it perhaps a bit odd if they were asked to shell out to that particular person and they put it in their own pocket. It wouldn't look particularly good. So if you are going to collect money centrally, then you've got to at least have a smart till that breaks it into departments for which read stylists. There's the other issue of employment status in respect of control, that if you've got a genuinely self-employed stylist, then the salon shouldn't, again in this perfect world, be exercising control over that self-employed stylist or telling them what to do. The stylist would make their own decisions about how they actually run it. And of course, it's complicated, isn't it? We know that sometimes salon owners will insist that everybody wears the same uniform. And so actually standing out and trying to assert that your client is genuinely self-employed can be quite difficult. Now, again, I refer you to the National Federation of Hairdressers because they've actually got quite a few sort of sample contracts which you can download. And that will, again, help you to sort of assert that your contractor is genuinely self-employed. Okay, so that's the first of my issues in this short podcast. You know, just being aware that it's very, very easy for HMRC to attack what we would notionally accept as self-employment and very quickly turns into employment. And of course, the issue there is that the salon owner, you may indeed be acting for the salon owner, they are going to be hit for employer's national insurance if it all goes terribly wrong. So if you're acting for the self-employed stylist, you know, you might cynically argue that it's not so much of a problem. But if you're acting for the salon owner, this is an area that you've got to be really quite ruthless on. You've got to be absolutely clear of your ground on this. Okay, that's the first part of this short podcast. What I'd like to do now is to have a look at the VAT. Right, now, as far as the VAT is concerned, the key question for VAT, of course, is who is making the supply? Who's making the supply? And there are a number of possibilities. The first is that it is the salon who is making the supply to the customers. And they do that because it is the business that employs its stylists. And they are simply employees. And so the employees work for the salon owner. The salon owner makes the supply. And any reasonably successful salon is very quickly going to go over £73,000 a year taxable turnover. And therefore, the salon will be VAT registered under most normal circumstances if it's of any size. So that's the first of these possible scenarios, that it's the hairdressing salon that actually makes the supply. The second one, which is a sort of a subset of that one, is where the hairdressing salon actually has self-employed stylists, but the self-employed stylists are making their supply to the salon owner. And the ultimate supply is still made by the salon to the customers. Now, it could be that the individual self-employed stylists are over 73,000, although I suspect that's going to be pretty rare. So most of them are going to be making their self-employment to the salon owner, and therefore the salon owner will be making the ultimate supply. And again, you'd reasonably expect under those circumstances for the salon to be VAT registered again. So that's two of the possible scenarios. The third one, which is more difficult, and it's the one that always makes me sort of a bit jumpy, is where the salon owner is saying, the self-employed stylists actually make their supply directly to the clients, to the customers. As I said, it always makes me feel nervous, that one. And if ever I come into contact with it, I'm very quick to ask the questions and get into the detail. So on this third one, we've got self-employed stylists that are making their supply directly to the customer. And therefore, the only supplies made by the salon owner, in this perhaps rather theoretical construct of having, say, six self-employed stylists and one salon owner, the salon owner will be making supplies of a chair rental to the self-employed stylists. Obviously, that's not going to happen if they're employed. It's where they are self-employed. So the issue, therefore, is have you got this correctly set up such that the salon owner's only supplies are of chair rent to the self-employed stylist? And in that scenario, the salon owner is only going to be VAT registered if the sum of the chair rents goes over £73,000. Now, in case you're thinking, well, actually, isn't that incorrect, Michael? Because the self-employed stylists are making their supplies directly to the customers. They won't be VAT registered. And the salon owner's supply of the chair rental, isn't that an exempt supply? That's some kind of grant of an interest in land, isn't it? And therefore it's exempt. And therefore the salon owner won't have to register for VAT. Well, HMRC are alive and alert to that particular one. And there's all the world of difference in VAT between a supply that is the grant of an interest in land and one that doesn't reach that exemption. And it is standard rated by default, and it is a supply of the use of facilities. And I think you'd struggle to get HMRC to come to the party and agree to anything like an independent stylist being given an exempt chair rent by the salon owner because they've got exclusive use of that bit of the salon. It just doesn't work in practice because most salons are a kind of open plan and everyone's milling around and having a great time. But in those circumstances, I'd be pretty clear that HMRC will want to see that the supply made by the salon owner is actually a standard rated supply of the use of facilities. I might add that it's not impossible that it could be an exempt grant of an interest in land, but you'd have to set it up so that the self-employed stylist could do all of his or her trade from their one area and not to any significant degree have to cross over into any other areas of the salon in order to make that supply. So in most circumstances in open plan salons, I just don't think that's going to be a starter. So there you go, folks. That's my short podcast on hairdressing. As I said, I've got a very short fact sheet to go with this, which gives you some cross-references into some useful links on the internet. So hopefully that's of some use, and I'll look forward to talking to you all soon. Cheerio.